Digging through the past is not that hard. Rusted cars and broken shards. Mining memories in an old wrecking yard. Echoes of laughter, whispers of pain. Time stands still, but the memories remain. In this graveyard of...
Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire. Y'all, presumably still y'all, all are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. Woo! Yes, sir. That is what the doctor ordered. It's July 4th here today. You guys will be watching this on July 6th. But I'm recorded a day earlier because me and my wife are going to go stay downtown at a nice hotel tomorrow and hang out, wait for my shows to happen down at the Punchline. And then after that, we're going to go back to the hotel and hang out with my brother and my sister-in-law and just have us a little mini vacay or some sort. We'll hang out. I don't get to hang out with my brother very often at all. I'm really looking forward to it. Having a couple of cocktails, spend some time in the pool. Should be a good time. Hope you guys are doing all right today. Having a nice Sunday. Hope your 4th of July weekend was everything you hoped it would be and more. It has just been, my kids' birthdays are both the summer. My youngest just had his birthday, and then my birthday is here in a few days on the 8th, and turning 48 this year. There are some people losing money on bets on account of that. Whew, I'd have bet against it, to be honest with you, but yeah, man, 48, it's coming around the pipe. Feel it already, but going into 48 feeling pretty good. I'm almost down to the weight that I was before I fell off the roof and broke my body all to hell. Not using that as an excuse, but I did gain a lot of weight after that accident, and then gained a bunch more in the pandemic, and feels nice to be almost back where I was. I was never no small fry, but I was always active, you know. Oh, excuse me. It's been a day here. I have burnt some chicken. Lots of fireworks. We'll probably hear some more fireworks going off. And I've burnt my fingers. Nearly caught my beard on fire. It's been a good July 4th. And it's going to continue to be good, I think. I hope. Not everybody is having a great 4th of July weekend. My heart, of course, goes out to everybody affected by the storms and the flooding off the Guadalupe down there in Kerrville and San Angelo's. It's just the events of this morning were absolutely horrific. And my heart really, I'm with you guys. I'm praying about it. They find as many of those kids as they can. That's the worst nightmare I think that any parent could ever wake up to, you know, and even worse than not knowing. So my heart is with my Texas brothers off to the west. It's a couple hundred miles from where I'm at. But I've been following along the news story. It's just been absolutely hideous. And I just hate it for everybody involved. Today, I'm not even going to bother no sponsor copy. I'm just not in the mood. My show, I can do whatever the hell I want. You know, if you want to be a sponsor, contact me. JWLComedy@gmail.com. If you don't contact me. Just kidding. Anybody can contact me. Ooh. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Today I'm going to talk about a car. It's never exactly set anybody's loins on fire, but it might have saved more marriages and family road trips and moving days than folks realize. Speaking of the Toyota Matrix, or if you're fancy, the Toyota Corolla Matrix. Now, the Matrix, it ain't the kind of car that folks slap on t-shirts or tattoo across their back, but if you was alive and drinking in the 2000s, there's a damn good chance you knew somebody who had one. And I reckon alone that makes it worth talking about. So here's the setup. Early 2000s, we've talked about this before, SUVs were starting to take over every driveway. Wagons, basically a four-letter word. Automakers were scrambling to keep younger folks interested in anything that wasn't a big old truck or a minivan. Toyota looked around and thought, hey man, what if we took a Corolla, stretched it up a little taller, slapped a hatch on it, and made it look sporty enough that a 28-year-old might buy the damn thing. Meanwhile, over at General Motors, at the same time, Pontiac is gasping for something, anything new to sell. Things are not going well for Pontiac. So in a weird, weird turn of events, Pontiac, aka General Motors, joined forces with Toyota. That's how we got the Matrix on one side and the Pontiac Vibe on the other. Same bones, just different badges. Toyota built that Matrix in Cambridge, Ontario, good old Canada. Pontiac built the Vibe at the NUMMI plant in Fremont, California. That's the same plant that's now pumping out Teslas, which is kind of poetic, I guess. Place that went from cranking out Pontiac hatchbacks to electric rocket ships in under 20 years. So if you're riding around in a Matrix, you're basically driving a Corolla with a dual citizenship. The first gen Matrix runs from 2003 to 2008. First Matrix rolled out for the 2003 model year. Toyota called it a sport wagon or a CUV because wagon was a dirty word back then. But let's call it what it was. It was a hatchback that just sat a little taller than normal. It's taller than my Mazda. The base model started around $14,670. Came with air conditioning and not much else. If you wanted color match windows or power windows, you were going to pay extra. And you could order all-wheel drive, but it cost more money and it dropped your horsepower, so you paid more to go slower, which seems like a hell of a deal. They also made the XR model. It started around $16,180. This one gave you color-keyed mirrors, door handles, so it didn't look like a rental car from budget. Leather-wrapped steering wheel, keyless entry, and some options like a sunroof and 17-inch alloys if you wanted to feel fancy. The all-wheel drive still meant detuned power. Toyota wanted to make sure, damn sure, that their all-wheel drive Matrixes weren't out there embarrassing the Camrys. They also made, and this was the coolest one, they made the XRS model. And listen, this thing was the sneaky little hot hatch nobody saw coming. Under the hood had the 2ZZ GE engine straight out of the Toyota Celica GTS. 1.8-liter four-banger revved to 8,500 RPM. Under 6,000 RPM, it was just a mild-mannered Corolla motor, but when the VVTLI system kicked in around $6,000, holy hell, the thing screamed like a banshee. It made up to 180 horses in its early years. Pretty serious business for a tall wagon. And the only downside was it needed premium fuel and was mostly paired with a 6-speed manual. I don't really consider that a downside. I'd rather have that 6-speed manual any day now that I own one. And because it was still front-wheel drive with like a 59-41 weight split, if you tried to throw it into a corner too hard, it'd understeer like a cow on ice. It'd be like a bull going through a fence. But for a car, it looked like it belonged in a Kroger parking lot. It was a damn riot. 2007, they dropped a special edition they called the M Theory. They only made about 2,500 of them. It was painted Speedway blue, had sport tune suspension, strut tower braces, 17-inch Caldina wheels, no extra power, but it looked like it meant business. Like, kind of like putting a tactical vest on a mall security guard. You see them guys? Where the Matrix shined was never performance. It was always practicality. Rear seats folded down flat with hard plastic backs that basically turned the cargo area into a miniature Home Depot truck. Motor Trend even tested it and found the Matrix could haul more than a Subaru WRX wagon. Front passenger seat folded flat too, so you could load in surfboards, lumber, or big ass fishing rod, whatever you have. I had tie down rails, cargo nets. Some of them even had like a 115 volt outlet. Toyota knew that folks was going to haul everything from baby strollers to barbecue pits in this thing, and they built it for it. Like any car, the Matrix had its hiccups, especially in its first generation, 2008. Recall for bolts and the window regulator, it could pop the glass on off track. 2010, certain engine control modules could crack, cause stalling or rough shifting. And of course, the Takata airbag fiasco came around and swept up half the cars in America, including the Matrix. Another thing that Matrix is bad about, they had that in the all-wheel drive models, they had that the rear differential was basically an on-demand module, and those things had a hell of a failure rate in those. But it seems like most everything has an on-demand rear differential, has a high failure rate. Of course, 2009, they introduced the second-gen Matrix. Toyota gave it a full makeover. It looked chunkier, a bit wider, sharper edges, front edge that was trying to look a little meaner. Inside, they upgraded the materials. They added Bluetooth, side curtain airbags, and traction control. It felt more modern, but not necessarily more exciting. Biggest change was under the hood. This is where I think Toyota missed the mark. Instead of that high-revving 2ZZ, Toyota went with a 1.8-liter 2ZR FE, made about 132 horsepower. Or you could do a 2.4-liter. I think that is, I have to look at my notes, a 2AZ, and it made 158 horsepower. The folks like to dunk on the base engine, but the second-gen 1.8 was actually pretty damn zippy. Car was light enough that 132 horses felt lively, especially around town. It had a good throttle response, didn't feel like a slug. 2.4 had more torque, a little better for highway driving, but it drank fuel like a fat frat boy at spring break. Another big shift was the first-gen higher trims had independent rear suspension for better handling. The second-gen kept that setup only for the XRS and the all-wheel drive versions. Most base models went to a cheaper torsion beam in the back. So the Matrix started driving a little more like a Corolla hatchback. Comfortable, quiet, but it's not gonna make you giggle on a twisty road. Toyota kept the Matrix's cargo tricks. Rear seat still folded flat. You could haul a good load, but they lost a little bit of cargo space on the redesign. First gen maxed out about 53 cubic feet. Second gen dropped to around 49. It's not the end of the world, but folks who use their Matrix like a rolling U-Haul definitely noticed. And it struggled. Second gen, eventually went away. It didn't stick around. There's a couple of reasons for that. Lost its edge. First gen XRS gave the Matrix a little street cred. Second gen dropped the screamer motor. The new XRS felt more like a sporty trim than a legit little hot hatch. Also, by 2009, the market for these little cars was getting crowded. Mazda 3 put their little hatch out. It was kind of tough. Kia Soul, Honda Fit, all giving folks sportiness, style, or better gas mileage. Also, big thing, in 2009, GM kills Pontiac. Pontiacs died, so the Vibe went away. Which, you know, anytime you have dual tool and all that, it hurts shared production and cost. Toyota also started really going hard branding their Scion models and eventually the Corolla hatchback. And it was just too much overlap for them to keep the Matrix around. Basically, the Matrix got squeezed out of a niche that it created nearly. By 2013, Toyota announced they was done selling the Matrix in the U.S. Canada kept it for 2014, but that was in. Its spiritual successors was the Scion IM, which became the Corolla IM, and eventually the Corolla hatchback we got today. But none of them really replaced the Matrix's Vibe. Yeah, that was a good pun. Should have made a note about that. It left a legacy, though. The little cars are still sought after. The Matrix was never a rock star. It didn't make posters. It didn't show up in rap videos. But it's the kind of car that showed up every single day. Fired up without complaining. Hauled most everything you threw at it. It could be a commuter car, a cargo mule, a college kid's road trip machine. Or if you had the XRS, a little sleeper hot hatch hiding under all that practicality. And that's worth remembering. So, here's to the Toyota Matrix, car that proved sometimes you don't need to be flashy to be damn good at what you do. The Matrix we owned was a 2009 model. It was a base model. I can't remember what trim it was. It was nice. It had the alloy wheels and I think we bought it. We bought it for like 19. I think it was like 19 even. Bought it brand new off the Toyota lot. It was a zippy little car. It was kind of a fun little car to drive. We bought it for Rage. We had moved out to Spring. Well, the Mazda had started having problems. That old 626. I've told you stories about it. Transmission was getting a little, it developed a tendency for overheating, and Mazda's miles were just getting up there. It's getting to that stage where you either going to have to put some serious money in the car or sell it to somebody else and let them put some serious money in it. So that's what I did, and y'all know that story. He didn't put any serious money in it, and he went and totaled it. I think what really did us in was Rach. At the time, we were living in Spring, and Rach had a job down in the Galleria area. She was a graphic design artist at the time for a company called Hunter McBain, a little advertising agency. And she was headed to work one morning. This is when I was working in Conroe, so I was working, you know, an hour and a half north the other way. Stuck out on the job site. Phone service wasn't great out there around the lake back then. Working up at Lake Conroe. And she's going to work. I went to work really early, like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning usually. Trying to beat the traffic. Ooh. I don't want that no more. And she left, usually around 7 or something like that, go to work, beat some of the traffic on 610, get there by 8:30. And she got down on 610, and the Mazda overheated and started cooking itself to the point it shut the engine off. And she had to pull over on the side of the road, which I'm sure whatever city you live in probably has a loop, high-speed loop like 610. Not, you might live in a small town, but 610 is a dangerous place to be broke down on the side of the road. somebody who was a record driver for years, we were always telling them, stay in your damn car, you know, which is hard to do when you're getting cooked. You know, summertime, in a hot car, it ain't running, ain't got no air conditioning. And she was terrified. I was freaked out too, because I'm 2 hours the other way. That time of day probably would have took me nearly 3 hours to get to her. I didn't know what to do. I was panicking. Rachel's panicking a little bit. She's in a shit situation. Her mom and dad still lived out in Midland at the time. Well, I believe her dad was in Huntsville. We're all far away. So I did. Any boy would do when he don't know what to do. Called my mama. And Sherry Kay had a AAA membership. Sherry Kay said, you know what? I got this. You go back to work. I will make sure Rachel's taken care of. And Sherry Kay called AAA and said, lied to him, told him her. This four, were we married yet? Oh, we were married. I think she told him Rachel was her daughter, though. I think she told him Rachel was her daughter. And she was really worried about her. And this and that kind of stuff. They need to get over there just as quick as they could. And sure enough, AAA showed up in a reasonable amount of time and picked that Mazda up. And took Rachel on back to the house. I think she might have got an Uber to work that day or something. But sorry, my shirt's up in hot. My little air conditioner just ain't cutting it tonight. So I knew I was going. I think that's when, that might be when the timing belt went. When I told y'all the story about me having to do the timing chain, stuff like that. It was either when it blew the radiator or when it did the timing chain. It blew the radiator one time real bad. Blew the water pump, blew the radiator all to hell. I had to tear half the front end off to get that dadgum radiator out of that truck car. Long story short, I didn't trust that car no more after that. And Rachel's boss at the time had a friend that worked in the fleet department over at, I think it might have been Mack Hike Toyota. It's the one over there by the Astrodome on 610. Our credit wasn't stellar, but the guy assured us he could get us approved for a decent rate. We just need to come over there and pick out a car that's going to be right for us. Of course, we couldn't go too expensive because of our credit, you know. So we went down there and we talked to him. And he said, well, you know, there's a couple models you can look at here. But the two main ones was they had a Toyota Corolla and they had a Toyota Corolla Matrix. And the Matrix was kind of cool looking. I liked the way it looked immediately. I was like, man, I like that better than that damn Corolla. And then I sat in the Corolla and I couldn't even get the seat far enough back in the Corolla that I could have drove the damn thing comfortable. In the Matrix, the seats went back a little farther. It was a little more comfortable. You had a little more room in it. But Rachel drove that Matrix one time, and she decided that was a car for her. I felt pretty good because of Toyota. Figured that was going to be less maintenance for me. I had never bought no new car before, so I was feeling all kind of ways about that. Like, I've never been in that situation. So we ended up settling on it, mate. We had to come up with a big old down payment, get our payments somewhere that felt comfortable to us. I sold the Mazda. Might have sold some equipment I had too. But I sold some stuff and we had enough money to get that little Toyota Matrix. That little car, Rachel just loved that thing, man. In and out of traffic, that thing would zip and go wherever you wanted it to go. It was a fun little car to drive. Ours was just a little 1.8 front-wheel drive model. It was a good little car, man. This, of course, before our children were born. I don't even know if we was pregnant yet when we got that Matrix. But I know we were studying on it. We'd been working on it, practicing. But we had some fun adventures in that little car, man. I had a gig in Arkansas. This is right after Rachel had only been pregnant just long enough for like morning sickness and smells to start screwing with her pretty bad. And I had a gig. That might have been the first time we took that car to Tennessee. I think I had a gig. There's this great club I used to play in Jackson, Tennessee called South Street Comedy Club. I miss that club. And its owner, Harvey, like I have never, that club was just a great club. The first club I ever headlined. I think that might be the trip. I think the first time I headlined might, no, first time I headlined is when me and my mom went. But this was the second time I went up there and headlined that club. I took that Matrix. It had a free service at the Toyota dealership for so many thousand miles. I run that little Matrix over there. It's due for an oil change and had people at the Toyota dealership change oil. Rachel went with me. We just left from straight from there. We were going to just hit the road, man. We shot up 59. We started heading up 59. Rachel, well, she was feeling bad. She said, there's some kind of smell. It's like oil burning stuff. I couldn't smell it, but I ain't got a real good, strong sense of smell, you know. She said, man, there's some kind of smell. It smells like oil's burning or something. I said, man, I can't imagine what that is. A brand new car, just got the oil changed. Can't even imagine. We drove that car all the way from Texas, from Houston, Texas, to Texarkana before we stopped, before we had to stop to get fuel. And we stopped in Texarkana to get some gas. And Rachel said she's going to go to the bathroom, see if she can make herself feel better, try to make herself throw up or something. I decided just for shits and giggles, I was going to pop that hood on that Matrix and see what went down. I popped that hood and there was oil all over the top of the engine and that damn oil cover cap, the oil cap for the refilling cap was sitting upside down on top of the engine. Boy, I cussed a blue streak. I was hot. Brand new engine. Now it's got oil all over it, man. I had to go there and get some cleaner, spray it all off, wipe that engine down. Also here, I told you so from somebody who clearly smelled there was a problem with the engine. I should have stopped to check it a lot sooner. She wasn't mean about it, but boy, she took some of the energy. She got on the phone with a Toyota dealership and let them have it. Really raised some hell with them. And the way my wife is, she has got a degree in political science, and that woman can take you down with nary a curse word and just cut you in half and be nice and sweet the whole time. It's a remarkable superpower what she has. I cannot do it. Somebody repeat themselves three times, I will tell them to go F themselves and hang up the phone. Rachel is my secret weapon when it comes to customer service. Because when I start getting hot, she takes over and the problem gets solved. It's amazing. It's amazing. There's one thing I can't handle. Customer service people, when they start repeating themselves like a damn robot, I just lose all interest in having any more conversation with persons. Give me a manager, a supervisor, somebody I put on my Karen hat, I'm done. If you can't think any more critically, just repeat the same words over and over again. And if that's your job, that sucks. It does suck. But my God, it does not get anybody anywhere. It just irritates me. I got that damn thing all cleaned up. Oh, I was hot. We went on to Jackson. That was the first time I think we took that car that far. First trip, pretty uneventful. Good time. We were all excited because we were coming up on our, we're coming up on our 12 weeks. And, if you don't have kids, you might not know what I'm talking about, but it's kind of customary, or at least this is the way I've been taught, is it's customary to wait till 12 weeks when you can determine the gender and all that kind of stuff before you start telling people that you're having a kid because of miscarriages and stuff like that. I suspect that's what it's about. But we're coming up on our 12 weeks. We hadn't told anybody yet. We hadn't told my parents. We hadn't told her parents. We hadn't told any family members. We had one friend that knew. And the only reason our one friend knew was because she was a nurse. And she had access. We didn't have a lot of money back then, but she had access to those. It's an ultrasound. It's a 3D ultrasound, 4D ultrasound, some shit like that. Anyways, this ultrasound could like look down there and kind of, it was really in-depth ultrasound. As you go on later through the pregnancy, those ultrasounds can kind of tell you what your baby's face looked like. That's how in-depth they are. But our friend had invited us to her office downtown where she worked. And she said, I'll do an ultrasound and I'll be able to tell you the gender of the baby. We both wanted to know. We were both tickled to death. We were going to be parents, a little terrified. But we wanted to know. Wanted to know what baby we was having. We drove that little matrix off of downtown Houston down to the medical center. And went to the office where our friend worked. And we went back there and she started doing the ultrasound on Rachel. And she started giggling. She said, do you want to know? And Rachel's like, yeah. And she's like, well, you're having a girl. And it's like it became real, you know? Really, of course, I'm gonna be a girl dad. That's the whole thing. But real, came real. Remember that day we walked out of that office and we got in the car and we started going down the road and Tiny Dancer by Elton John came on the radio. We sang our hearts out, man. We sang our hearts out to Tiny Dancer. That song always makes me think of that moment when I was a kid. Now, my parents, before they knew we were pregnant, had planned this big cruise. And this cruise is going to leave Galveston, go to the Florida Keys, and then go to the Bahamas. I think it was a 7-day cruise. And a bunch of family, my Aunt Pat and her dearly departed husband, Greg, was coming. And a bunch of my mom's friends was coming. And my sister was coming. And my mom and dad had bought tickets and arrangements for me and Rachel to be able to come to. And we got pregnant. I think we were about 12 or 13 weeks in when we went on that cruise. I know right before the cruise, we told our parents. We told Rachel's parents, and of course they were overjoyed. Rachel's dad was just beside himself. He was never seen anybody as excited to be a grandfather as that man. Told my parents, of course, my mom was just tickled pink. By God, she's finally getting a grandbaby. You know, I was already 30, close to. Older than that, I was 32. I think she was losing hope. You know, 32 is old in hillbilly years for a grandbaby. But we, hell yeah, man. Still going to go on this cruise, go have a good time. This might be our last time, just kind of enjoy each other by ourselves for a minute, you know? We did. I smuggled weed on that cruise ship because that's what I was using for my Crohn's disease at the time. That's about the only time I could, about the only way I could get by is to have a little bit of that every evening to calm my stomach down. And I was still having real bad flare ups and stuff back then. We did. We packed up. Went down there and met them in Galveston. Got on the cruise ship. I managed to get my stuff on board the cruise ship without getting caught. And we set sail. My mom was so tickled because they're, you know, one of the nights when you're on that cruise ship, they do a big dinner like in the grand dining hall. And my mom wanted to be the one to tell all her friends, my Aunt Pat and all them, that he's going to have this baby. I don't know if we had picked out the name yet, but we were close. And I hadn't thought about this stuff a long time. I just made myself some little notes about it. But it's all rushing back. It was fun, man. We got on there. Rachel's having a little bit of difficulty, a little bit of seasickness, not nothing too bad, but it's because she was kind of going through the morning sickness part of the pregnancy. And remember, me and my sister played a lot of ping pong on that cruise. We'd go up to the ping pong tables and play the shit out of that ping pong table. We had had one when we was younger. And it's a fun way to reconnect. And my Aunt Pat's husband, Greg, found out that I snuck something on board. Boy, he was all weekend. He was all that cruise. He said, "Hey, man, won't you come over to my room and bring that shit with you?" And I had a system, boy. I'd go in the bathroom and I'd run all the hot water in the bathroom and take myself three or four good puffs out of my little one hitter and then spray a bunch of Axe body spray. Cover up the smell. It was the kind in the blue can. I came here and it kind of smelled like Fahrenheit a little bit. I know, because that smell makes me sick now. The first cruise embarkment or destination, and we signed up for everything. We wanted to have some fun. We were going to go snorkeling in the Bahamas. Rachel found out about this cool-ass resort in the Bahamas called Atlantis, and it's like where all the celebrities and the stars go, and she had found out how to get us a day pass at Atlantis. And my big thing is when we got to the Florida Keys, I wanted to go see Ernest Hemingway's house, the Hemingway house. I really wanted to go visit the Ernest Hemingway house. I'd read about all the polydactyl, the five-fingered cats, and all the cats that, like, basically that house was left in a trust to the cats, and the cats basically owned the house. And I just had to see it. That's something I wanted to see. We got to Florida Keys. Me and my sister and Rachel, we rented these three bicycles. And we took off and we just started exploring a little bit. And Kimberly was going to go do some of her own stuff. I think she went to an Irish bar for a little. But when in the first place, we took off riding, all I had was this little map. And I was trying to ride this bike and look at this map, and we was trying to get to the Hemingway house, which was a little distance away. And we're riding through the Florida Keys. I hadn't been back in the Keys at that point in years. Oh, look the same. We're riding through there and see an alley, and it looks like it's going to shortcut over to where the Hemingway house is. I was like, let's go down here. So I took off down the alley, and we come around a little curve in the alley, and there was all these clearly Haitian dudes in the street, and they looked like bad news, bro. One of them had a gun down by his side. They were all piled around a car and arguing and yelling. And I immediately turned around, looked at Rachel and Kimberly. He's like, turn around, get the shit out of here. This is not for us. This is not for us. It's none of our business. We're going a long way to the Hemingway house, by God. I got my wife and my younger sister on bicycles. Like, we're about to be a statistic. We spun our ass around. Went a long way around. Oh, sorry, I'm yawning. Went to the Hemingway house, and it was everything it was promised. beautiful old house down there in the Florida Keys. And everywhere you go, there are cats in that house. Them cats own that house. They walk around that house like it belongs to them because it does. In fact, in some of the rooms, there was cordoned off areas for the bed and stuff because that's where the cats hang out. And there were just these big old five-fingered. You know what a polydactyl cat is? Polydactyl cat's got five fingers. Five fingers on each hand. They even got some, I think, what's got six fingers. But that's probably not called a polydactyl. Because poly don't mean six. But these polydactyl cats were beloved by sailors, men of the sea, because they made pretty good rat-catching cats on boats. And I guess that extra claw gave them just a little more dexterity for hanging on in rough weather. At least that's how the legend goes. Ernest Hemingway, obviously a man of the sea, a man fascinated by the sea his whole life, was a big fan of these polydactyl cats and adopted and took in every one of them he could find. Of course, they bred, had more polydactyl cats. My buddy Steve had a polydactyl cat for a little while, but it had a seizure and died, so it's not really a happy story. But it was a cool cat before that seizure. Yeah, Hemingway House was cool, man. Also, kind of walking around. It wasn't really his house. It was like some lady he was shacked up with or something at the time. But just walking around that house and knowing that he spent time there was kind of cool to me. We left there. That's when Kimberly split off. I think she went and found her an Irish bar, get her some cocktails, have a good time. We was going to meet up later on. There's a pirate museum there. We was going to meet up at the pirate museum. We never saw Kimberly again after that. We made our way, stopped at a couple little shops to do touristy stuff. Meanwhile, the adults in the group had rented an electric car. They had gotten lost somewhere or gotten the electric car stuck. We didn't know all the details of it, but we were hearing blips of information on our phones. My mom's friends, I'm going to just tell you this right now. So my mom had this friend named Denise. And you probably met a woman like Denise before. But Denise was, she's this gal that she would just get, anytime there was alcohol involved or available, she would just get hammered and get out of control and just become a hot mess. And then the next day, there would be all these stories about how she got food poisoning. That was Denise. Denise was that. And her husband would back her on it. And, boy, she just got a little touch of food. This woman got food poisoning everywhere she ever went. There was alcohol. Let me tell you. She got food poisoning. If there was a martini, she's going to get food poisoning. By God. Mom's other friend, former friend, they weren't friends much longer after all this, but I can't remember her name. Saved my life. Maybe Linda. Linda's one of the trashiest women I ever met in my life. She's just rednecky, trashy, blue, not even blue collar, just trashy. And her husband was real high up in the Wendy's Corporation. And this dude was, they had this daughter. They had this daughter who I think was 21 or 22. And she was, she had a nice body. She was an attractive girl. But the whole trip, she was wearing bikinis and stuff like that. But her dad couldn't take his eyes off of her. It was the creepiest shit. I swear to God. Her dad and Denise's husband couldn't take their eyes off his girl. It was like embarrassing at points. And granted, the girl was wearing some very revealing outfits and stuff. They were just kind of trashy. Those trashy folks. We got to know them a little better, found out how much. But it was dad. Her dad. I was in his office one time and noticed he had a pic in their house. He had a picture of her in her bikini on his desk, which I thought was kind of, I don't know. It just rang a bell, you know. Like, whoo, And I don't think my dad really cared for these people too much. My dad's not the partying type. I think he just sort of tolerated them because my mom had some friends and was trying to be more outgoing and do stuff. And I think my dad just tolerated these people. My dad's not a big drinker. Just that those aren't his type of, that's not his type of party, right? So they'd gone out, they'd rented them a little electric car. I don't know what Pat and Greg did. My Aunt Pat, when I was growing up, my Aunt Pat used to follow me around with a can of Lysol, wipe off everything I touched. She had married a dude with money, and it always felt this way to me when I was a kid, that she felt like, you know, they were a step above us, and her kids were a step above us and all that stuff. So I would go over there and play. She's my cousin Gina, and my cousin Carrie, and my cousin Patty Mizell's mama. And she would follow me around with a can of Lysol. Anything I touched, she would spray it down with Lysol. Like I was dirty. You know? Maybe I was. I don't know. We didn't have no money. I don't know. Some people just like that. You know what I mean? So that's the gang. That's the gang of people on this trip. Pat's, at the time, boyfriend Greg, he's a hoot and a half. I just love Greg right off the bat. This is my first time meeting him. We got along like gangbusters. Greg had a lot of, Greg reminded me a lot of Bobby Clark, you know, just in a fun, all the fun ways. He was there to have a good time. Greg had made all his money in gas stations. Greg owned these gas stations called Fuel Man, and they were like the first gas stations all over East Texas and Arkansas that allowed truckers to use credit. And the truck driving companies had all switched to it. He made, and they didn't need no attendant. They could get their fuel at any time of night, whatever. And he was like the first guy to dream that up in our area. And he had made a killing. He made a killing off of the gas station. And Greg had him a good hydrocodone prescription. Kept him feeling limber and loose. He liked gambling, having a good time. He was all over that boat. Him and Aunt Pat, when I saw her with him, she was a different person. She was fun and engaged, and we had such a great time hanging out with her on this trip. It was like a different Aunt Pat than I'd ever known. So they all went out and did their thing, and we went to the Hemingway house and then stopped at a couple. We stopped at little shops here and there. And I don't remember everything we did in Key West there, but right before we came back to the boat for our embarking date, whatever time you got to be back to the boat, get back on the boat. We went over to the Pirate Museum, went to the Pirate Museum, and that was fun. And Kimberly finally showed up and met up with us, so we all went and turned our bikes back in. Of course, you got to go through customs and all that shit when you get back on the boat. And get all your shit looked at and searched. I was hiding my stuff again. Little did I know how much trouble I could have honestly been in if I got caught. If I'd known that risk, I probably wouldn't have risked it. But I just thought, oh, they're going to holler at me a little bit. So that's not the case. You should definitely not smuggle drugs on the cruise ship. More I hear these days, they're better at finding it. But I don't know. I haven't been on a cruise since this. Get back on the boat. Of course, that night embarking, going to Bahamas when they have the big family dinner, and my mom and dad get to stand up and give a toast and tell everybody they're about to be grandparents, and it was this really exciting, beautiful moment, and kind of made it even more real for us. I don't remember how many days it takes to get to Bahamas. So it was like a day or two on the boat before we got there. And we had stuff planned to the hill. We were the first day. No, so when we get to, we're going to Nassau and Freeport. And I think we went to Freeport first. So the first day we go to Freeport, and that's where we had decided to go on a snorkeling excursion. to my dad, and I believe my sister might have went on with us, but I know my dad for sure is there. I got a picture of me and him on the pontoon boat. And the water was murky, and the visibility wasn't very good. It wasn't the best snorkel. It wasn't like snorkeling in Aruba. That was way better. But it was a good time. We had a good time hanging out with my dad. And, you know, the boat ride out was nice, and they had decent snorkeling gear. And we enjoyed ourselves. Had a good little excursion, you know. Didn't get to really see a lot of fish or anything. Like I said, the water, Freeport's kind of dirty, man. It's a little more industrial, and there's a port there, and it's just, the water was kind of yuck. It wasn't a great place to go snorkeling, but we still had a good, we had fun, you know. Got out there and had a good time with the old man. He enjoyed the hell out of himself. And then, of course, we'd go back to the boat. And I guess the boat goes, they stopped in port for just a little bit. I think we might have walked into Freeport for a little bit, but I don't really remember. We come back. And then the next day, they took us to Nassau. And Nassau is where they have that resort called Atlantis. And this resort is the best water park I've ever been to in my life. It was insane. First of all, it has this huge aquarium built into it. And the fish, and it's one of the better aquariums I've been to. It was just such a grand time. Me and Rachel, you know, we're just lovey-dovey. We got a kid on the way, but she's not pregnant enough that it's hurting her feet, or she's having trouble walking yet, or any of that stuff. And we went on. We didn't see no famous people, but we went all through the aquarium there in Nassau. And after the aquarium, we decided to go check out the water park side of it. This place has the coolest lazy. The lazy river goes all around the whole park. And people will bring you drinks and stuff right to the lazy river. We had our little card set up. And, of course, Rachel wasn't drinking, but I had me a couple, you know, a couple of whiskeys. While we were having a grand time. I don't remember how long it takes to get around that whole park. It's the longest lazy river I've ever been on. I am a sucker for a lazy river. If I can just float on something, even if I ain't got something to float on, if I can just kind of, I'm buoyant, you know. If I can just kind of cruise in the lazy river, go around the park, that is, I wouldn't even build myself a swimming pool. I'd build myself a lazy river around this yard if I was going to build something like that. That's my favorite, man. That's, to me, it's like tubing when I was growing up, but without all the danger and water moccasins. You know what I mean? Rachel said, I want to check out the beach. I said, me too, man. They're supposed to have a beautiful beach here. And so they do. They have this beach area on the other side of that resort area. And we get out of the lazy river. We make our way over the beach. And these waves, they look a little bigger than what I'm used to in Galveston. You know, you get 4-foot seas in Galveston, you're seeing some rock and roll. That's a lot for Galveston. But these waves look a little bigger than 4 foot. I'm watching grown-ass men get knocked down in them. I'm like, well, they probably just wasn't ready for it. I remember I had on these Oakley sunglasses, nice sunglasses, and Rachel had on a pair of I had cheap sunglasses. Rachel had a Ray-Ban. She had these high-dollar Ray-Bans. Bro, we go out in that water. I have never been pummeled like that in my life. Those waves would pick you up off your feet and body slam you into the ground. The first one that hit me, boom. Sunglasses go flying, they're gone. I turn around, I go try to help Rachel. Poof, she gets picked up, body slammed, sunglasses gone. We don't know where they are. We decide very quickly we are not built for those kind of waves. I don't know how tall they were, but my Lord, they were beating the piss out of us. And it was not fun. You weren't having a good time at all. She was scrambling towards the shore, and I kind of went off in a diagonal motion trying to go with the waves. And lo and behold, man, I was about 60, 70 feet from where we was originally, and those damn Ray-Bans and my cheap sunglasses floated up and got both of them. Them Ray-Bans, they was high dollar. I was glad to have found them again. I was hollering at her from the water, still getting knocked down by waves. I was holding on to them sunglasses. The waves beat my ass. I was crawling, dragging myself out of there on my elbows to bring them sunglasses back to her. You like to be the hero, right? Feels good. We decided to hell with that. We got back into Lazy River. We spent the rest of our time there at Atlantis, I think, in that Lazy River, just floating around the park, having a good time. We start making our way back to the boat. It was pretty close that you could, like, walk. And so we were walking back to the port to get on the boat. And we run into my father. We didn't know was my father and my mother and her gaggle of friends had all went on a booze cruise. My father was disheveled, a little disoriented, drunk, and mad as hell. He was mad as hell. He didn't like doing that. He didn't want to go do that to begin with. He'd rather gone with us to the water park. He was just mad as hell. Had one shoe was hanging off his foot funny. He was miserable. I could tell he had a rash because he was walking with his legs all far apart. Us big boys get friction rashes when we're in a swimsuit too long. I've had it. You're a big boy. You being honest, you've had it too. Sucks. Especially when it's salt water because it just keeps eating at it. He's walking bow-legged, and it's a long walk down this little bridge, and we're in this huge, everybody off that cruise ship are in this line of people trying to get back on this. Sun's just cooking us, baking down. He's got this big old flop hat on. He looks like the most miserable human being you've ever seen in your life. And he griped about my mama and her friends all the way back to the boat. And me and Rachel got back to our room and laughed our asses off about it. And they was, I don't know how the rest of them got back down the plank. My mama was a heavy, unsteady lady. I don't know. I've only ever seen my mom drunk once or twice. So she wasn't a big drinker either. But when she hung out with them girls, she went drink to drink with them. Of course, we found out later Denise got food poisoning on the booze cruise. Surprise, surprise. And then it's like a three or four day sail across the Gulf back into Galveston. Well, they had a big storm, and so we had to stay out in the Gulf like an extra day. And we think that was an excuse just to keep people gambling because the storm didn't even come near our boat. But boy, the waters got real choppy that night, and it's the only time I've ever been seasick in my life. We were in the cheap cabins on the very bottom of the boat. And when that boat started hurling and turning, Rachel was sick. And then I got sick. And then, and I ain't been on a cruise ship since because that was absolutely miserable. But if I ever go on one again, I ain't staying in the bottom because what I didn't know is after a lengthy cruise like that, all them tanks fill up. And the smell starts coming back up through the pipes. And guess who gets hit first? The cheap seats. That's right. Starts coming up through your pipes first. And I was going in there and trying to smoke my stuff, calm my stomach down, and then spraying that Axe body. And the combination of that Axe body spray and whatever that chemical stuff is that goes in ship toilets ruined me. I can never, if I even smell, there's an old cologne called Fahrenheit. If I smell Fahrenheit, I will hurl everything. Time. That smell ruined me. I don't know how many times I puked that night. I know it was more than 11. I can't tell you after that. It was a lot. Then we came back on. Started getting ready for that baby. We took the nursery. We redid the whole nursery. I did this. Rachel dreamed up this cool scheme with these vinyl decals, and I painted that nursery with like three different layers of pearl and different stuff to make it look like the sky in there and to make it, it was beautiful. We did like a faux finish on it and everything. Rachel helped me finish it up. Of course, my job was getting busier and busier by the day. I was taking on extra work to help pay for this kid that was on the way, and We was getting ready. Getting ready to be parents. You know? You don't know what's coming down the pipeline. Guess this is probably early to mid-July. And I always had this thing, man. People all my life, man, when I was younger, I heard this a lot. You might have heard it too, around Southerners or rural people. But anytime somebody like me was a little bit too out of hand, a little bit of a character, people say, well, he just needs to have a kid. That'll make him grow up. Right? You heard that? Have a kid. That'll make you grow up. Well, you just need to have a kid. That'll make you grow up. And I believed them when I used to hear people say that, I believed them kind of because I didn't know. I didn't have no experience with it. And I thought maybe there was going to be, I'd heard stories about how it feels to become a father. I thought maybe there's going to be this thunderclap moment, like a switch flipping in my chest. Jolt of wisdom, some mystical transformation. Woo, listen to them fireworks go. But the whole 9 months we waited for our firstborn, that lightning bolt never struck. That was still me. Same worries, same flaws, same boy trying to wear a man's boots. Turns out the growing up didn't happen in the waiting. That's not where, there's no revelation. It happened in the choosing. It was, choosing to come home when the workday wasn't done, choosing to stay gentle when frustration was clawing at my throat, choosing to show up even when I felt like I had nothing left to give. And every one of those choices felt like staring down the same crossroads my father stood at some point. Ambition, nurture, time, money, pride, presence. And I was having to ask myself the hardest question man can face, what kind of man are my kids going to see when they look up? Because all children carry the scars of their childhood. It's just the cost of being raised by people who are still figuring it out. People with wounds of their own. But I didn't want my children's scars to be me. Not the way that my father was mine. I wanted to be better or different, even if it broke me trying. And I reckon that's all fatherhood really is. It's a daily gamble. That the man you're becoming might just be enough to raise a child who believes love can be trusted and that kindness ain't weakness. And if that's the only legacy I leave behind, hell, I'll take it. During all this, my comedy career is just slowly going to shit. 2009, they closed the Laugh Stop down for good. Home club disappeared, and I told y'all about all the frustration and everything that came as a result of those things happening. And when you think, oh, I got 9 months to learn how to do this, I got 9 months to be a father, I got 9 months. 9 months sounds like a long damn time, but it is not. It goes by fast. That 9 months has scooted by and you still ain't ready. I wasn't. Rach had gestational diabetes with Junie and Noah. And just something happened to some women. So she would have to like go on the special diet. She's the only woman that lost weight when she was pregnant. And she had to like stay on it, keep her weight up and make sure. And the babies get, with gestational diabetes, you end up with big babies. Both our babies, big babies, fat little chunkers when they come out. We kept waiting around for Junie to show up, and Rachel never would go into labor. We had a couple little fake scares, but nothing real. And we go to the doctor, and the doctor says, we had this great obstetrician, Dr. Williams, over in St. Luke's in the Woodlands. And Dr. Williams said, we're going to, I forget what they call it. Basically where they give you some medicine to make the baby show up a little earlier. God, what is that word? That's going to drive me crazy. It's not dilate. Anyways, it don't matter. Instigate? No, I ain't get either. Instigate. Somebody's picking a fight. Damn, I am not going to get there. All right. Well, they're going to do that.
Whatever that is, they're going to do that.
They're going to get that baby here. I remember the night before it stormed all night. Stormed. I mean, we had to get up like 5 in the morning to get to the hospital, be there on time. We got up, got in that little matrix, went down to that hospital. We already had the car seat. I think Rachel's mom had bought us the nice car seat. I took it over to the fire department, the firehouse, and they showed me how to install it. They checked it, make sure I installed it properly. I used to do that. I don't know if they still do that. It used to be if you go to the fire department, they would check it, make sure it's installed properly, because a bunch of kids die every year from improperly installed child seats. So. But I will tell you, even in that matrix, with that big-ass child seat, that baby seat in there, you had to fold the front seat down, the passenger front seat down, and then Rachel would have to ride in the back. And it was rear-facing, you know, they're all rear-facing on the babies. We went up to that hospital, and they gave Rachel that medicine. Oh, no, that was the funny thing with Junie. So when we got to the hospital, they went to give Rachel medicine and figured out Rachel was already in labor. She had gone into labor that morning. And they said, so we're not going to do that. They did give her the spinal thing, whatever that is, epidural. God, that guy that gave her the epidural was such a prick. I wanted to beat his ass. That was already nerve-wracking. He hurt her. She still has pain from that first epidural. That guy hurt her. He didn't do a good job. Couldn't get off his phone long enough to do his job. Jackass anesthesiologist. I ain't never met an anesthesiologist I like. I hope maybe I do one day. Actually, I hope I don't. Good to be wary of somebody to put you to sleep. We waited all day for that baby. Didn't show up till about 5 o'clock in the p.m. And I'm sure you heard it from other people. Man, that first time you hold your little baby in your arms. I mean, there ain't no thunderclap moment, but something in you changes. It does change everything about who you are. Changes the way you're wired. I remember when I brought him home from the hospital, we was in that little matrix, and we had to drive down Goslin Road, and rednecks and their F-350s were driving all crazy, and I just remember feeling like, I need an adult. Why isn't there an adult here with me to help me with this? You know, I shouldn't be in charge of these two, you know. But somehow, against all odds, I got him home safely. Of course, Skip and Michaela came over to see the baby. My father-in-law stayed. We had our little dog, Tina, then little Jack Russell that he had trained. And my father-in-law stayed with us so he could train the Jack Russell how to behave around the baby. And let me tell you, I don't know what he did. Tina didn't go anywhere near that baby. Tina didn't want nothing to do with that baby. Tina and that baby acted like each other didn't exist for the first 6 months. And it was an adjustment you figured out. We took another, my career was failing and comedy, everything was going to hell. I was getting less calls, nobody was wanting me. And truth be known, I was still doing an act that I did when I was much younger that was had a lot of drugs and partying in it, and I felt insincere. I felt disingenuous. It was hard to do that act on stage anymore because I didn't feel like I got a kid now. I'm married. Live in a nice neighborhood. I'm not trying to live like that. That's not who I am anymore. But I didn't know how to write my way out of it yet. And I wasn't getting enough gigs to do it. We took one more. South Street booked me the headline again. Took my oldest up there, just a baby. So
family, all the family in Jackson and Humboldt could meet. And took Junie through Graceland, man. We went through Graceland. I don't know why I was so adamant to take a 2-year-old through Graceland, but I thought it was a good idea. We had a good time. That was the first time Judy went swimming, was in that pool at the hotel there in Tennessee. And back then, I used to have an earring. I had this little gold earring I wore for a long time. I'd had it since I was 18 or so. I was playing in that pool, and I think Judy yanked that earring out of my ear or something, and the earring fell down in that pool. And I was just like, and there was these people. They had the kids down the pool, and these kids was dirty. They were some dirty-ass kids in that pool. And I remember one of them popped up out of the water and goes, "I found a piece of gold." And I was like, "You can keep it too, kiddo." And that was the last I wore an earring. I think that hole's all growed up through, probably. Got in a wreck with that little car, man. That's back when my license was still suspended. I was trying to get my license straightened out. My license was all jacked up. And Super Bowl, maybe 2010, 2011, somewhere in there. We went up to the Walmart in Conroe. We was pulling down the aisle, and this red Nissan Altima just come flying out of the parking space backwards, slammed into the left front end of that car. Bent the little tie rod and some of the suspension components, bent the wheel in. Then he looked around at us, he hit, and he floored it frontwards, and he hit a GMC, a 3/4-ton GMC 4-door truck so hard in that Altima that he knocked it 3 feet back out of the parking space. Cratered that Altima. We're trying to figure out what happened. Dude's run up to us going, "I'm effed up. I'm effed up. I'm effed up." I'm like, "Yeah, you effed up. You just ran into us, dude." And then I realized he was on something. I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "I just did acid. I'm effed up. I did acid at my friend's house." And we're like, "Oh, okay." Conroe police show up. There's this little spiky haired cop with Conroe police back then. I don't remember what his name was, but I hated this dude. Looked like a hedgehog. Looked like a little skinny hedgehog. Him and this big old tall cop. They come over and give me grief because I've got a suspended license. He's like, "If I wasn't in a private parking lot, I would take what it was." My license wasn't suspended anymore. I had finished all that and paid all the stuff, but I didn't know I was going to have to go take a drug. I got caught with weed in like 2004. And I didn't know I was going to have to go take a drug awareness class. I didn't know that was part of the thing to get my license back. So I thought I'd done everything. I was just waiting for him to send me my license. And he's like, "Well, your license is unlisted." It wasn't that it was suspended. It was like unlisted, or I don't remember what he was saying. Just got in my face, told me what he said. "Well, it's probably owed money. It looks like it was a drug charge." I go, "It was weed, bro." He goes, "Yeah, whatever, drug charge." I was like, "That's not the same thing." He was such a prick. He really talked down to me and from my wife and shit. And I wasn't even going to cause the wreck. I said, "What are you going to do with this dude over here? He's clearly on drugs." He's like, "No, he's fine. We gave him a sobriety test. He's fine." I go, "Dude, he ran around here and told everybody he was on acid. So I guess your little sobriety test didn't work." Well, then the other cop got involved who had some sense, and he was like, "What?" I go, "Talk to any of these 8 people out here that saw this happen. He was running around here telling us all he's on acid." And they're like, and sure enough, they talked to like 2 people. Like, "Yeah, he told us he's on drugs. He's on acid. But you're over here giving me grief about, you can't even figure out what this dude's on." And I'll never forget, they walked over and asked the dude, "Hey, have you taken LSD? And he's like, "Yeah, officer." I told him straight up, man. I don't even remember how we got back in the car. The car might have been driving. No, it wasn't drivable. We had the car towed back to the house. I guess we must have got a cab or something back to the house there. Baby was okay. Rachel was okay. We were a little banged up, a little spooked.
I sent the car over to Showcase Body Shop there in Conroe. They promised me it was going to do a good job of it and everything. I spent it. You know, it looks like it's just a little front end damage, not a big deal. But they put the damn thing on a frame machine and clamped it up on a frame machine. Didn't need any frame work, but they clamped it up and put it on a frame machine. When you clamp the car, put it on a frame machine, it leaves these clamp marks on the frame. And every half-ass car buyer and half-ass car salesman thinks they're a genius for seeing clamp marks on a frame. They think they have figured out the secret of the car when they see those clamp marks. And half the time they put them on the frames, clamp them up, they don't do nothing. They just put it up there to check it. But it's something somebody told stupid people a long time ago, and they've all got it in their head that if there's clamp marks on the frame, the car ain't no good, you know. I saw that cop a while back, man. He was in his personal. Where was I at? Oh, there's this little place right there in town. It's called El Bosque, a little Mexican grill. Had a big patio set up like a sports bar. And me and my guys were going to do a job one morning. It was right across the street from Home Depot. Me and my guys were going to do a job. It was Saturday. I think we might have ran into town to get some lunch or something. We've been working all day on this fence job. Tired and sweaty. And I just happened to see that jackass get out of a jacked up F-250. Kind of brodozer piece of shit. You expect a dude like that to drive. He's got little man syndrome. With these two raggedy old bar flies. And walked through that parking lot, go into El Bosque, and then I saw him come out the other end while we was waiting in the drive-thru and sit on the patio. And I told my guys, I was like, I'm about to get that dude back. They're like, what are you going to do? Something real stupid and illegal. Y'all stay in the truck. And I pulled in the parking lot of El Bosque and jumped out of that truck with a pair of them old dykes, old clippers. And I went down the left side of his truck and I clicked cut both valve stems off on them dually tires and the valve stem off of that front tire. Got back in my work truck, went on to work. Watch how you talk to people. That's all I'm saying. Not the smartest move. Probably could have got myself in a lot of trouble. But I know he had a shitty day, and I know I was the architect behind it. I'm okay with that. Of course, it comes, you know, it goes fast. You have kids. All of a sudden, you got a two-year-old, and we weren't trying to have another kid. In fact, I was operating under the false auspice that you can't get pregnant when you're on your period. And we had some sex, and I dropped my guard. She was on her period. Thought we was okay. A few weeks later, wife calls me at work. She says, I got a surprise for you. I was like, hell, I remember thinking there was a new video game I wanted. I was hoping it was that video game. I was like, ooh, what did I do? I'm getting a surprise. I've been working hard. Been working hard, being a good husband, good daddy. Maybe I'm getting a surprise. Man. I come home. I met them at the little park in our neighborhood. She handed me this bag with a bunch of tissue paper in it, and inside that tissue paper was a stick she peed on. And I panicked. I was like, oh shit, now I need two of everything I ain't got. Good move, Longmire. Good move. Not ready for that second kid. I was excited, you know. Wasn't too long after that, you know, we find out we got a little boy on the way. I brought him home on July 4th. He was born on July 2nd in 2012, right there at St. Luke's. I drove him home in that little Matrix. My mother-in-law took Junie and was at the house waiting for us, had the house all ready for us. And They let Rachel out of the hospital July 4th, about 5 or 6 in the evening. We had little Noah. And I remember right when we was driving in our neighborhood, everybody was popping fireworks and the sky was lit up. And there's my little Yankee Doodle Dandy right there in the back seat behind me. Before. We went out in the backyard. We had this big old deck and put a big old blanket out. Mama sat there with Noah and I stood and hugged out on the edge of the deck with the oldest and we did sparklers. Watched the fireworks. I just remember my heart being so full. Like, I've got this whole little family now. So, felt miraculous. Felt like some magic was starting. It was a magical little place for us, that place we lived there. Didn't take us long to figure out we might have to sell the Matrix because for all the cargo room in that daggum Matrix, you couldn't put two modern child seats in it. There was nowhere for another adult to fit in except who was driving. And it was damn near impossible for Rachel to get them in and out of the car. It was just, the car was too small. We'd outgrown it as a family. I'd done some wheeling dealing with this fellow over on 105. Bought a Kawasaki mule from him, some other stuff. And he did some consignment sales. But at the time, CarMax was paying real good value. We'd paid $19,000 for that car. It had like 40,000, 38,000 miles on it. But we had made a lot of double payments, mainly because Toyota screwed us. But we were ahead. We were way ahead on that car. I think we maybe owed like $5,000 on it, $4,000 on it at the time. CarMax was offering good money on the little cars. And I took that car over to CarMax, and sure enough, that dummy come out there and looked at it and got up under a flashlight. Like, oh, it's got clamp marks. This thing's that framework. Best we can offer you is like $8,000 for it. I was like, you're out of your mind. Even with clamp marks, this car's worth more than $8,000. You're out of your ever loving mind. You ain't got a clue how to value cars, how to buy or so far. I walked out of there pissed off. Drove that little Matrix home. Put it up on jack stands, got out of there with a grinder, cleaned them clamp marks up, took black spray paint, psh, psh, got rid of them clamp marks. Cleaned that detail, that little Matrix, took it over to my buddy there on 105. I said, man, see what you can get for it. Boy, he sold that car for $15,000. We walked away with like 14.6, 14.5 on it or something. He sold it for like 15.5. He took like $1,000 for selling it. Well, we come out like a diamond on that little car, man. Didn't lose even a little bit of money on it. That was a good ass car for all the time we had it. And if you can find them, that little 1.8, the damn thing's damn near indestructible, man. I still see them on the road now. I think we'll wrap it up there. Let's do some testimonials. Testimonials, if you will. Let's see what we got. Got my shit together today. Let's see. Nope, that's wrong. I say I got my stuff together. I'm in the wrong episode. There we go. Testimonials from last week. Let's see. At Samuel Baum 2255. I agree that certain models aren't going to be successful going electric, but what are your thoughts on the Slate pickup coming out? I wouldn't get it. Excuse me. Because I have no use for electric right now, but if it brings back small, affordable pickups, I'm in, but I think I'm just a dreamer. Samuel, you are a dreamer. Bless your heart. I don't think we're ever going to see small, affordable pickups again in this country. Chicken tax and cafe regulations have conspired to ruin that. And I think the only way you're going to get a new one is if you import it from somewhere else. I
like I said, I'm a fan of some EV vehicles. I think EV is not a terrible idea for some purposes. When I first started reading about the little slate pickup, it's been a year or so now. When I first started reading about it, they were going to make a $10,000 pickup, a little electric pickup. It's going to be base, no frills. And I was tickled pink. I thought that was a great idea. I thought they were going to sell like gangbusters. Well, now we've gotten to the end of where they're actually going to release damn things. You're talking 2022. I think it's a terrible idea at 2022. You can go out and buy yourself a Ford Maverick, 22 loaded, ready to go. Everything you want on it. No, you know, electric windows of the works, and still have the reliability of internal gas combustion engine. So I think they screwed themselves. I think they screwed the plan up. If they had released that truck at 10 to 15 grand, I think it'd be a major hit. I don't think it's going to be much more than a flop at 20, but I may be wrong. We'll see. Kyle MacDonald, 8351. I'm glad you post these here. For whatever reason, my podcast app didn't update, so I'm glad that I can still get your podcast. Yeah, we are working on that with our dissolution from Believe. And I tried to go back to my old audio podcast from my old RSS feed carrier. And they're trying to get some more money out of me, I think, because they come at me with a bunch of crap about why they couldn't update everything. And I've been on the phone back and forth with them all week trying to figure it out. I uploaded the episode. It just did not go to all. It didn't go to Spotify, and it didn't go to Apple for some reason. I think it's on Apple now. Anyways, I am in the process of the next day. I will be switching over to a new RSS feed carrier, and I'm just going to start over fresh there and move all the podcast over there, because I feel like these people are blackmailing me or something a little bit. I don't care for it. So I'm going to move everything to Libsyn, I think, and then just go from there. So everything should be fixed by Sunday. If it's not, just please be patient with me. It's going to get fixed. But I'm working on it as we speak. Well, not as we speak. I might be working on it as we speak. Punk and Peony. That's a funny name. Sometimes a closed door ain't a punishment, it's a pause. Beautifully put, friend. New fan here and a fellow Houstonian, and so glad to have found you. Wishing you all the best. Well, we are very glad you're here, Punk and Peony. I like your name. That's cool. I'm glad you found me, too. Always glad to have a fellow Houstonian get a chance. Well, too late to tell you that, but I will be at the punchline tomorrow, which will be yesterday for y'all. Ooh. All right, let's wrap this thing up. Where are we at? Oh, yeah, man, we're cooking and cooking. We owned that little Matrix during one of the most chaotic stretches of our life. And sometimes you just need something steady when everything else feels like it's coming apart. Our babies were born close together. We were broke as hell, juggling every bill and worry we could possibly juggle. Y'all know my mama passed away right after Noah was born, and then Rachel lost her daddy not even 2 years after that. And I think about how that shaped us, and maybe shaped my kids too. Sometimes I wonder if the folks who came up with astrology were really just talking about the seasons and the rhythm of life. Like, maybe it ain't the stars or planets that decide who we are, but the time of year we show up in this world. Especially in olden days. A baby born in winter might have gotten more snuggles and quiet nights by the fire, but a July baby by October is 3 months old and hitting that big developmental leap right in the middle of harvest when everybody's too busy or too worn out to play. Kids grow fast in that first year. They go through so many developmental changes in that first year that affect who they become, that maybe the season changes them, even in ways we'll never see. I've always thought there was something to when folks are born that affects who they become, but I don't think it's got much to do with planets, just this one right here. A three-month-old takes in the world different than a six-month-old. Same house, same parents, same love, but the season outside and the way life's moving around them, that's different. And back when folks lived by the land, I reckon it mattered even more. These days, fewer of us live by harvest schedules.
But my kids are both summer babies, which is always, when I was in blue collar work, my busiest work time. Back then, I'd bust in long days. I swear, there was times I would leave the house when they were babies, little bitty, that I could tell they had grown. I mean, I was working 12, 14-hour days. I swear they had grown between the time I left for work and the time I came home. The most important thing I can tell you is how fast it goes. And I know if you're a young dad or you're about to be one, you've already heard that 1,000 times. But listen to me, bro. It is frightening fast. My youngest just become a teenager, and I honestly don't know when the hell that happened. He was just my little biggie boy last week. So hold them as much as you can. Set them on your lap as much as you can. Take as many naps with them on your chest as you possibly can. Take pictures of all that. Carry them, because one day you'll put them down and never pick them up again. I'm rooting for you. I tell you that every week. I'm going to tell you till you believe it. I'm JW, and I love you. I thought we was about to get another big burst. I heard one of the mortar rounds go off. And, whoo, get my butt in the house. This is hot out here.